SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday. Race fans, Sirius 219 XM, 201 Sports Zone, 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevevick.com. A little damp, obviously, and largely off the turf, except for the two stakes here at Saratoga. And I'm moderately surprised. We got rain. Right now it's actually nice and it's clear. And maybe we got less here in Greenwich, which is not unusual because Washington County separated by the river, by the Hudson River, and they might have gotten more in Saratoga. And they're also, you know, with lots of rain kind of scheduled off and on here the next several days, undoubtedly want to also, you know, protect the turf course for the last, 3 weeks here of the meet. So they took off the, let me reach for the, there we go. They took off the 5th, 6th, and 8th. And we'll see about scratches in the sequence with the $140,000 plus pick six carryover. And so probably mid-morning, maybe when I talk to Seth later, we'll have a better handle. There are at least two strong MTOs. Lemieux, who you heard from Mark Cassie yesterday, maybe you've been listening on the replay this morning, and you heard Cassie feel that in that fifth race, which was going to be long on the turf for the two-year-old fillies, now 7/8. The juveniles, when they've got a mile in a 16th race, it cuts back to 7/8, and when the older horses, it stretches out to 9 furlongs. So the 5th will go 7/8, 5.5 for that older fillies and mares. The Goddess of Snakes, Al Gold, and this one comes back, has been away, and as it happens, yeah, this is a three-year-old debut for this Street Boss filly, now with Chad Summers. And Tally Lynch had had her for her debut, which came in the Small Wonder, and that was an inauspicious career debut for the Goddess of Snakes. But in this spot, she may be very good in here. She's been working pretty well, including a gate blast on July 21st. So 47 flat from the gate. And we'll see again. We'll see who stays in. You know, there are certain, it's funny, there's a couple of spots, particularly the 5th and the 6th. You've got some trainers that are pretty well established, pretty well known for letting their horses run on a wet track. And I don't even think necessarily, I mean, they got the track sealed right now. It was probably sealed, you know, going into the night to, you know, try to keep as much water out of it as possible. But, sealed right now. And so there's just no way to know where you're going to be at 3 o'clock this afternoon. If they're, you know, the rain, it's all hit or miss. So, and actually for the next several days, I don't know if there'll be as much in Old Del Mar where where we'll be tomorrow morning when we 24 hours from now when we say good morning. And you know, the difficulty here today is this is a sequence that, you know, I kind of was eager to take a shot at. So let's just wait it out here. The Bolton Landing, which goes as the ninth, and they're holding the MTOs there, Averly Jane for Wesley Ward and Golden Bell for Wesley as well. And Wesley, if it stays on grass too, Wesley well-positioned. He's got that poppy flower with Jose Ortiz. And I actually included that Chi-Town Lady, 8-1 with Johnny, that, you know, the other Wesley Ward, right, as it were. This is also, of course, a race that we talked about with Mark Cassie, where he's got Fulminate, who looks good in here, and who I picked, but this is a bunch of lightly raced types. You got 5 of the 10 making a second career start, and as, you know, those that watched High Oak win know, you know, second career start can, on a regular basis, be the start where you see the most improvement in a horse. So, you know, there's some horses here that, you know, sort of like High Oak, seemed slowish on figs coming in. How about, for instance, knees and hips for Joel Politi and Tom Amos coming in from Ellis. That's another factor in this stake today in the Bolton Landing. You got horses who made their last starts at Gulfstream. That's Fulminate. Knees and hips from Ellis. How about the Butchie Reed, Cash's King, LC Racing, Practical Joke Philly, stand-up comic, who's 2-for-2 at Parks in Delaware on the main track, so there's also dirt to turf involved. You've got one other, right? There was, Chi-Town Lady, who was last seen in the spring at Keeneland. So you got 10 horses in here, 5 coming from out of town. You've got, I think, 3 that... or 4 now, yeah, 4 out of the other 5 coming out of Belmont. So there's surface switches, there's a lot going on in that Bolton Landing. So, and then, of course, we're expecting to talk to Bill Gallo, because the whole undertaking today starts with technically the first running of the Jonathan Shepherd Handicap, the longtime New York Turf Riders Cup Handicap, and the other grade one of the summer here at Saratoga. So this group is good. And Kerry Brion, who, of course, kind of took over and going on from it for Shepherd himself, important to her, and all eyes undoubtedly on the Mean Queen after the Kaiser miscue, Kaiser fiasco, Kaiser mishap. I call it what you want. But Baltimore Bucko in here for her out of the Smithwick win, but it is not all, by any means, it is not, even with 4 horses scheduled to run, it is not all Brion and nobody else. Jack Fisher, City Dreamer, and Gibrafaro for Sean Clancy. And I didn't want, I don't know. I've discussed with Sean. Don't want to give Sean the yips here going into the race. But we'll get Joe. Maybe we'll get Joe instead. For a this is horseracing.com/Saratoga special visit. And of course, wish Sean a lot of luck with the pair. And of course, City Dreamer second in the Kaiser. And Gibrafaro keeps nibbling along at top level. And, you know, 3rd beaten 8 in the Smithwick, 2nd by a neck to Galway Kid in the Sims, in Virginia. But there's other considerations. Richard Hendricks has got a first-time North America recent revelations. A five-year-old, last seen at Perth. And Radissian, too, on the outside. Leslie Young. And we'll see what coming out of the Smithwick fourth. And did win the Kaiser, if you go back 2 years, the seven-year-old Medician gelding. And it's always encouraging to see horses that have run well here, of course, over the, you know, the flat style steeplechase race. So we'll talk to at least one or other or both, Bill Gallo and Joe Clancy. And you know, I think I've got some mea culpa to do. I've been so rough. I didn't get a chance to see Wasabi the other day, the Westminster Best in Show, right? The Pekingese that I was very, very tough on Wasabi. Well, I didn't realize until yesterday. When I was getting ready to, you know, we thought Bill might join us yesterday, but they actually had their steering committee. They had a NSA meeting. And as I was, as I was going through some Wasabi prep, and I knew that Peg Steinman had hosted. I didn't realize that Mrs. Steinman is one of the co-owners, and she's not a big time, you know, dog show, dog breeder. She's had Pekingeses, and that's how she, you know, she's had dogs, but you know, not to show. And so she got involved on this side of the ledger, and essentially in her first attempt in the realm, she wins Westminster. So that I thought when I saw the videos on Saturday, I thought, oh, nice, you know, Mrs. Steinman's hosting. I thought maybe friends of the guy that showed was. I didn't know. I had no idea, and I didn't see it during Westminster. I did not see, you know, the. And we actually, you know what? That's because we had gone to sleep. It was late, and I think we had kind of faded away. So we never saw the Best in Show judging. I just woke up to see that a Pekingese had won, and I was like, oh. But these are extenuating circumstances. So congratulations to Mrs. Steinman. That's great. And I don't know if she, I don't know if the, I will find out from Bill. I don't know if the dog, there's like three owners. So does the dog move around from place to place or what? Do you get one? Do you get him for 4 months and then, then your co-owner gets him for 4 months? I don't know. I started to read about it. I'm like, oh no, that I've been sort of merciless on the topic. Actually, it's kind of funny. So anyway, we're going to talk to Pete as well this morning and catch up with him. And we'll talk to Sid Fernando, of course, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Sid wrote a very, what can we call it? Pithy column in TDN, if you didn't see it. And it turned up last night. And I retweeted it. Actually, Graham Motion had sent out the link. And it's essentially, Sid's trip to Saratoga last week and circulating at the sale and coming over to the main track and doing the bon vivant stuff around town. So he wrote this column that is essentially, it's J.J. Hunsaker. It's like a Broadway, you know, meet and greet. Who did you see? Who did you talk to? What did you do? And it really made me laugh. And when I sent out the link this morning, I pulled a line from, for those of you that, you know, that are New Yorkers by trade, you know, the longtime gossip columnist, Cindy Adams, who is actually still alive at 91 and very much alive. And there's a documentary, I guess, that I read about involving Cindy Adams. It's going to show up on the cable network, one of the cable networks. But, you know, her tagline has always been, only in New York, kids, only in New York. So I said, only in upstate New York. So read Sid's piece. It's kind of fun. He just name drops all the way through it. I'll kid him about it in a little bit. I see that we're off the turf yet again at Colonial, 3 days in a row. And, you know, first they got hammered with those 3 inches. Then they got another inch and change yesterday or overnight into yesterday. So very unusual. I mean, they've got, you know, I surprising, like Keeneland used to have. You remember Keeneland? You know, there was a period where Keeneland, I don't even mean with the synthetic, Keeneland never used to come off the turf. I mean, it had to be, you know, a quagmire for Keeneland to come off years ago. But Colonial too. They don't typically have to deal with this to this extent. So a third straight day. And I should mention, I did not. I did see yesterday. Speaking Colonial, I will slip this in. I never. Yesterday was so fast paced. I never even really got to the Tuesday or the Monday follow ups. And I will do that. But. On Monday, I guess I can put away the Emerald, the Long Acres Mile. That was fun yesterday with Michael Piewicz, by the way, and the outpouring of support for Rocco Bowen is really, really nice. I mean, that, if you didn't see that on the feed yesterday, I put up a piece from the Seattle Times, which was really nice. And it talked about, the owner, that, the former University of Washington, broadcaster, football play by play man, that part of it, Bob Rondo, and it really drives home how important the Long Acres Mile is to the community, to the racing interested community, the equine lifestyle in the Pacific Northwest. Really nice. Anyway, put that away. But I did want to slip in. You had Michelle Lovell on Monday, two more wins, and she's atop the standings at Colonial. And actually, I reached out to her yesterday. I said, you know, how many starters do you have left? And can you win the meet? And, you know, the standings are fairly compact. So she said that she's got some more starters. She said it's going to, you know, they're going to have to step up in class, for Michelle to, you know, lead the trainer standings, at the end of the meet. So let's see if I also want to mention on this topic from Colonial yesterday, the absolutely fabulous Hammy Smith, three wins yesterday. for Hammy Smith, including in the nightcap for Gorey, for his brother. And let's see the latest. Yeah. And Hammy actually moves. He's sitting with five wins at the meet and is a win behind Michelle. Michelle Lovell's got six wins in 14 starts, and Mike Trombetta, 5 for 27. Hammy, 5 for 22. And then there's a big group at four wins. So it's going to be a spirited battle, and especially, you know, for horsemen that have got a strong, you know, roster of horses that can, in these last couple of, for off the turf type, see who manages today. Going back to Monday as well, one winner at Indiana in that pick five on Monday, $40,335, and that included a 6-5 Brad Cox, you know, not likely to lose type, 3-5 on Bill Downs's morning line. Went off close to even money. But so essentially this was a pick four, but you had a longest shot on the board that went off at 17-1 in the six, $36 winner. You had a $12 winner in the tough claiming race, and then you had another fourth choice in the first leg. So you had a $14 winner, $36 winner, $440, $12, and then in the nightcap, a $30 winner, and only one ticket able to tie them all together for $40,000. Nice job. And by the way, some people are saying, you're saying to yourself, well, probably maybe a computer group. Well, we'll talk a little bit about that in a second, because Dave O'Rourke essentially confirming yesterday at the law conference something that, you know, we've sort of hinted at and indicated, you know, in New York, in addition to limiting the pick six and pick five pools and keeping the computer assisted wagering teams out of those pools, NYRA also is shutting off the groups with 2 minutes to post, 2 minutes to the scheduled post in the WHIPs, in the win, play, show pools. And as a result, and not just, actually not just in the WHIPs, as a result, you have not seen, you know, there was real consternation about the Del Mar, and I sort of hinted at this the other day. You know, the other day with the Del Mar 9-2 down to 9-5 in the, you know, in the last flashes. We haven't been seeing this at Saratoga. It's been effectively muted. And a few people have kind of murmured about it. But it's very helpful. And it really, I won't say it levels the playing field completely, but by shutting off the groups, it at least gives the retail customer a chance to evaluate, you know, where the pools are. And, you know, you still have the will pays for the double and pick three, et cetera, to evaluate. But if the groups are finished, you know, sending their, you know, their money in, for those of you that, you know, are looking at exacta pays, they're not as volatile, et cetera. And obviously the, you know, the win price particularly you know, there are people that monitor the, you know, the place and show pools. But yeah, for the most part, for the, you know, the majority of players, the win price, you know, the straight odds are not diving. And it's a big positive. It you know, from an atmospheric point, and from just a fairness, you know, standpoint. So, kind of was waiting for that news to be, you know, fully, you know, confirmed and circulated, etc. So now it's out there for everybody to absorb. And I've been talking. In fact, it's funny that the timing of this coming up, because there's quite a bit, given what we discussed with Matt Hegarty yesterday too, some of the elements of the roundtable and the exceptional performance evaluation tool that McKinsey the Jockey Club are going to use as part of the monitoring to watch for, you know, potential performance enhancement. And that the product that as I mentioned on Monday, the product that it was developed with and the product they're going to use is Thorograph. And this is something that Jerry Brown has talked about and, you know, has come up over the last, I don't know, 4 years, right? It's at least 3-4 years that this has been, you know, kind of being considered and utilized. And so they're going to take Thorograph figures and apply algorithms that McKinsey developed. And it you know, in a perfect world, is going to point out, move up performances that are out of the norm. So that in itself could be a potential deterrent, as Alan Foreman discussed the other day as well. So I'm anxious. I've been talking to Jerry because when I saw that on Sunday, it you know, it triggered right away. The minute I saw the reference to this concept, I realized right away this is the thing that, you know, that Jerry Brown has worked on with the Jockey Club. So there'll be more about it, I'm sure. And Jerry's going to be up at, he always comes the last week of Saratoga. And so I I said to him, will you sit down and talk? And he's funny. He can be difficult to pin down. You wouldn't think that Jerry is media shy, but he kind of is. In the background, I hear Bill Gallo, I think. Bill, good morning. Bill, I'm good. And, you know, I'm sure people assumed when they saw that some races were coming off the turf, maybe that meant that the Jonathan Shepherd was going to be postponed. But in fact, I imagine the turf is perfect for the Grade One.
It is. You're absolutely right. Thank goodness they kept us on the turf. It is a Grade One, and these conditions, as we've talked about many times before, are actually ideal for the jumpers. A little, given the ground, a little gloomy. It's kind of like Ireland. So our guys are delighted. All 8 horses are over at the stakes barn and ready to go.
Excellent. We're going to look at the field in a minute. Let's first talk a couple different things. I just talked about this third day of no turf at Colonial and Monday's 2 races that both looked quite nice. They've been rescheduled for next week.
When they came off, they had to scramble quickly and then reschedule. So we just rescheduled those 2 races for next Monday. We're not going to race next Tuesday.
Okay.
And then we'll close out the Colonial meet the following Monday on the 30th. So we're in good shape. It was you know, disappointing, obviously, but they had 3.5 inches of rain.
Yeah.
And it was unavoidable because it really would have created too much turf damage there.
All right. So so essentially two more, two next week, two the following week, and then those horses will feed into the fall schedule. What where do we stand going into this afternoon for the rest of the Saratoga meet?
Well, we got the race today, obviously. We're not going to race next week. We took that week off. We could not fill that race that we was a rating, a high-rated overnight handicap, high-ratings race. So we're going to close out the Saratoga meet on Wednesday, September 1st, with another A other than, numbers of two or A other than, and that should have a good solid field of about eight. And then we're actually, we got great news the other day, we are opening up at Belmont on opening day. We're going to card the, our two traditional races there, the two stakes races, September 16th. First and second race is the William Entiman, which is a novice stakes race, and then the Grade 1 Lonesome Glory, another $150,000 Grade 1. So I was really pleased about that. And obviously it's a pivotal race or pivotal couple of races because it's actually 1 month from now and 1 month prior to our championship day at Far Hills on October 16th. So our schedule is looks pretty bright, actually, moving on from today to September 1 to opening day at Belmont.
Oh, that's tremendous, and nice to get the, you know, the, well, both. I don't want to ignore the Entiman, and for those that enjoy the baked goods, yes, it's the same family, and you can have a chocolate glazed donut on that day to celebrate. and of course,
actually,
right?
Mr. Entiman was a great guy. You know, everybody knew about the donuts, and but he was a wonderful guy. Had jumpers with Jonathan Shepherd, in fact, and just a delight to be around. And we were when he passed, we were so happy to name a race after him at Belmont, which his wife, I'm sure she appreciates. She always comes and attends the race, so I'm hoping she can get to Belmont on opening day and make that presentation the way she normally does with members of her family.
Well, that's a perfect segue to today's. I guess we call it an inaugural Jonathan Shepherd, the former New York Turf Riders Cup handicap that was run for how long?
80 years.
It's 80 years.
Running.
Wow.
I guess 79 years as the Turf Riders and year one for the Shepherd.
Well,
it's got a lot of history. It's,
yeah.
You know, I'm very happy about this. I'm kind of proud that we, and appreciative that Naira agreed to do this. I had asked Martin Panza and thought it was a good idea, and I ran it through the press department and the turf riders. I asked Dave Grinning about it, and he thought it was a great idea. Everything aligned nicely, and we got a wonderful Grade 1 race named after a terrific horseman.
Well, and you know, whether Jonathan's record was as sparkling here at Saratoga or not, it would have been an appropriate honor. But in particular, his remarkable feat of decades of a winner, one winner, at least one winner every year for 43 years?
I think it was 46 years.
46
was
years.
Talking about that this morning, and that's a record. That's a that's just Joe DiMaggio's kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. Exactly right.
Nobody can break that one for sure, but
no.
Jonathan's, you know, he's still with us. He's down there. He's retired. He retired last year at the end of the year. He retired on top. He was the champion trainer. It was an abbreviated year, but he was retired as the winner, which was great. And Kerry Breon has kind of picked up the pieces and taken the stable over, and really is doing a phenomenal job. And has four of the eight horses. Something very Shepherd-like that Breon is running for half the field.
And let's start there and look at this group. 105 post for the Shepherd, and with Breon attacking this race, and I suppose a lot of the conversation, hard not to look back to the Kaiser and the Mean Queen and the incident that left Tom Garner on the ground and opened the door for Bodes Well to swipe the Kaiser. But the Mean Queen comes in here and is certainly I'm not going to say that she's the horse to beat per se, but she's certainly prominent, and it was made the 2-1 favorite. Does get some weight from from a few of them, but I'm not just giving in to the Mean Queen here in this spot.
Yeah, she's such an interesting horse in this particular race. You talked about what happened the last time she ran. She clearly was going to win the race by 10. And she jigged and jagged as going to the wire. No apparent reason. The trainer's convinced that she reacted from the whip, so obviously the Mean Queen is not going to see it feel the whip today by any means. But she's the wild card. Her weight is interesting as well. I mean, I do assign the weights, and it was kind of a guesswork because she's actually picked up weight, and in theory she's the high weight because fillies technically get 10 pounds, and not in a handicap, but they get 10 pounds in jump races from males. So if you tack 10 on her, she's carrying the equivalent of 57, which would make her the high weight. But she's going to take some beating for sure. She's never run at this level, though. This is kind of a different ball game. So it's going to be interesting. Baltimore Bucko, once again, not to harp too much on the weights, but what Baltimore Bucko did in the Smithwick was under 142 pounds. This is 14 pounds. On top of that, that's a significant weight change. Whether it has an effect on him or not, I couldn't tell you. But clearly, by winning the Grade One, he earned the high weight assignment. So you have to look at things like that. Weight shifts, it could be a factor. The extra distance, and it may not seem like a lot. It's one more fence. They start on the backside. They jump one fence down the backside and go into the first bend. So it's slightly longer, 2 3/8. The weights have been adjusted, and we have a mystery horse, the Mean Queen, who we don't quite know how that happened, but she's certainly fits in this group right now.
Well, and speaking of mystery horses, give us a little background on Richard Hendricks, with Del Rio Racing's recent revelations, making a North American debut.
Yeah, I don't know a whole lot other than the PPs. The horse came over to Hendricks' stable recently. They don't know a whole lot. I mean, he's a non-winner to two over fences, so he's clearly jumped up in class. He's 15-1. He'd be the longest shot on the board for sure. But these imported horses have been successful, not only here at Saratoga, but on our circuit. So I was at the barn this morning with the group, owned by a large group from Nashville, Tennessee, a nice group of people, Del Rio Racing. And they're just happy to be here, that group. The horse could have waited until September 1 and run in the non-winners or two, but I think that they were anxious to see the horse run and thought that this might be an appropriate spot to debut. So I can't say anything more than that, other than hopefully he does well. And Henrik said he'd love to be 1, 2, 3. If he was 30, he'd be thrilled. So new group of people out of Nashville with a new horse, and I wish them nothing but luck.
Let's review the horses coming out of the Smithwick. You already mentioned Baltimore Bucko getting weight, but French Light as well. Gibrofaro for Jack Fisher, and Sean Clancy's River D, and I suppose Redisian needs plenty of consideration for Leslie Young, who won this race last year with Rashawn. And Redisian's a funny horse, as one up here going back to the Kaiser 2 years ago, and. You know, it hasn't actually has not won since. I'm just noticing that. But the fact that he owns a win here goes a long way. Some thoughts about the other Smithwick exiters.
Yeah, you know, once again, that's what makes it a good race. I mean, it's you don't have a stellar horse in the race. So there's no snap decision. Snap decision, by the way, is heading to Belmont, which is I'm thrilled about. He's going to carry a bunch of weight and give weight away. He wasn't ready to do it this summer, but he's going to do it at Belmont. But there's no superstar in the race. There's no Moscato. There's no horse like that at the moment. So it kind of levels the playing field here. It's not a softer grade one, but it might be just a notch below the top without the big horse, and that just brings a lot of horses into play. And you just named them all, really. I mean, Redisian, if he runs his race, he's going to be right there. French Light, I know the barn is very high, and Carrie Brown's typically very optimistic about her horses. And she really likes French Light. She likes the way the horse is training. She got Jamie Bargery, who's come over from Ireland to ride this summer, and he's a very accomplished rider, and she feels good about that. So, and then of course Fisher. How do you ignore Fisher with the two River D stables? River D is Sean Clancy. That's his syndicate name. And Jibber Follows is steady as a rock. In fact, I think he's named after a rock. I think it's a mountain range in Spain or something like that. But the horse has been very consistent, as you can see by his PPs. He's got Graham Waters, one of our top riders. And then he's got City Dreamer, which is another interesting horse. He's ridden by Parker Hendricks, who's the son of Ricky Hendricks. And Parker's still an apprentice. He's got a promising future. He's won, I believe, 5 races already. And he's going to be one of our top riders for sure. And you never know. I mean, new rider, changing things around a little bit. His last race was a good race. He was a, you know, fairly solid second behind Bodeswell in that goofy race with the Mean Queen. But you could make a case for just about every horse in the race.
Well, and I think essentially we did. There you go. There's the field of eight, right? City Dreamer, Jibber Faro, Baltimore Bucko, yep. French Light, a silent player, excuse me, the longest of the Carrie Breon prices, the Mean Queen, recent revelations, and Redisian for the first.
You've got to look at that, you know, the listeners, I've said it a million times, but, you know, horses for courses, I mean, you know, how horses perform at Saratoga, it's a different ballgame. This is not a race meet up and down hills. This is a flat track. Speed is as of the essence. And when horses run well at Saratoga, typically they run well at Saratoga on a consistent basis. The other part is that, as you know, our horses are older and they're mostly geldings, but for the Mean Queen, and they run for several years and have an opportunity to come back and participate here at Saratoga. Those are the horses that are pointed to Saratoga, the proven flat track runners. So that's what makes the race so compelling. That's what makes it so important. And being a grade one and attaching a name like Jonathan Sheppard to it, it's going to be a special race.
Who's presenting with Jonathan absent?
A good question. Graham Motion is going to actually present.
Oh, perfect, Graham. Perfect.
Yep, Graham worked for Jonathan. He was the top assistant back in the day. Back in the day when Jonathan was training Flatter, a 4-time Eclipse champion, probably the greatest horse he ever trained. And Graham was a pivotal part of that. So he's kindly agreed to make the presentation in the race. I'm going to ask Dave Granning to be a part. You can kind of pass the baton on from the New York Turf Riders to the Jonathan Sheppard with Graham Motion presenting.
Perfect. I love it.
Yeah. Yep.
Bill, I would love to be there. We're heading to California, though, after the show. So I'll be okay. watching in
Have
the
a
car.
Good trip.
Thank you. We're driving down to the airport, so I will. And since Tina drives everywhere these days, I will be watching on the phone or the laptop.
So, well, good.
Safe trips to everybody.
We hope to put on a good show and a fun trip out to California.
I appreciate it. Oh, you know, and one other thing, I already earlier in the morning when I said that you were going to join us, yesterday with the potential for you to visit yesterday, I did the requisite work to prepare to talk about Wasabi, the Westminster Best in Show that was in your box the other day, and I did not realize I had seen the video from the weekend and with Mrs. Steinman, and I did not realize until I went and looked that she's one of the co-owners. I had no idea. I thought she was friends with the handler. I had congratulations to Peg.
It was a great story, and I had mentioned it to David O'Rourke a couple of weeks ago that the dog was coming to Miss Steinman's house for a couple of days, and it was actually his thought that maybe they would make a nice TV piece. And Tony Alvarado, who did it, and his team did a phenomenal job. But it was a lot of fun. Miss Steinman enjoyed it. But she does. She owns the dog. The dog came for a visit to go to Miss Steinman's house. When the dog is around, they parade the dog around. We got an opportunity to parade the dog around the racetrack. It was a big crowd. Everybody wanted a picture with Wasabi. He won at Westminster. He's probably the most famous dog in the country right now. But it was a lot of fun. I think everybody enjoyed it. And Keisha Courtney did a beautiful little piece on the dog, and at the end of as she was wrapping up, she actually thanked Wasabi for being on and stuck the microphone in his face. And for a moment, I thought the dog might say something, but luckily that didn't happen. But it was fun. It was. I think Nara enjoyed it, and I think the crowd enjoyed it, and so hopefully the viewing public enjoyed it.
Well, I'm delighted for Mrs. Steinman, and it sounds like you know this. Even though she'd had dogs before, she'd never participated at this level, right? I mean, this was her first go around in serious competition.
Oh yeah, no, this is the top of the top. In fact, the David Fitzpatrick with the handle actually said that. He said this is the in the interview. He said this is the Kentucky Derby. The Westminster
sure.
is the Kentucky Derby of the dog world. So now Miss Steinman's never owned the winner. David has actually trained two winners or handled two winners. His Wasabi's grandfather, believe it or not. Why are we talking about dogs? This is a horse show.
Well, no, this counts. You know, who? There's been plenty of crossover on this topic, and in fact, Carol Rio, who bred out of that Poncha de Leona, she bred Mucho Macho Man, and then she had, I think that Minpin, the miniature pincher, she had. She breeds miniature pinchers. And I think Boston Terriers, and either she had either the Best in Show at Westminster a decade ago or so, or at least the Best of Group. And so we've hit on this before. This is not a huge departure.
I'm good. I'm good with it then. Well, this was not only Best in Breed. This was the big show. So this was planned from the Steinman.
Yeah, this is as big. We talk about Westminster because I'm very frequently aghast and frustrated with what seems like preferential judging toward, you know, a certain set of breeds, and I'm a big Vizsla guy, and the Vizslas never get the attention they deserve.
Ah, well, that's interesting because going into this, I've never watched a dog show in my life, but because it was Miss Diamond's dog, I had to watch it, and It seemed long to me, but I was told, even the commentators, it would be like Little Andy, you know, previewing the dogs, and nobody was mentioning Wasabi. Wasabi, if it were a betting race, Wasabi would have been 30-1. So not only did she win, she won at a price.
I knew that Wasabi was heading into the, you know, into the finals, but into the, you know, into the best in show round, but we fell asleep. We watch it. Tina and I have watched it, you know, I've consistently for years. It used to be a huge thing on my website, a Derby Trail. There was a number of fans that there was like ongoing commentary the two nights of Westminster, and it's something I'd love to see when it gets back to the Garden. You know, this year it was up at a estate up on in Westchester.
Right. Exactly. But normally at the Garden, yes.
Well, like the horse show was at the Garden for years, and so sorry that I did not get to swing by the box and see Wasabi, but that was a very nice addition to the Saratoga atmosphere.
Well, you're the only one in the boxes that doesn't have a picture with Wasabi right now.
I guess so. Too funny. All right, Bill, this was great, and safe trips for everybody today in the first Jonathan Sheppard and the 80th overall, the second of the grade ones. It's already been a nice season for the jumpers at the Spa and Colonial, running parallel as well as we head toward the fall and everything that leads towards Far Hills. And we'll start to look forward after these next couple of weeks. Thanks, Bill.
Good things coming. Have a safe trip, Steve. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate
me.
It. Bill Gallo and the Shepherd today. How about, you know, you look at this, and I just realized I just got a text from Capital OTB. Let me open up the, what do you call it? The, what is that thing? the Zoom. Let me open up the Zoom and give everybody today's play of the day. And here we go. Zoom meeting. All right. And we're a little bit, you know, it's a little bit of a difficult situation because of the off the turf we got three things going on at once. There we go. Sean Clancy's texting me, and let Brian let them know at OTB. I every time I go to try to get into Zoom, it doesn't. You know, can't open the thing. I'm considering two different options, and I tried to find out from Rusty Arnold if he was going to leave Troubling Moon in the eighth race today. Because if he does, I think there's a chance. In Musical America, the Charlie Baker is 5-2, and you know is going to end up being the favorite, I would imagine, the MTO. But I don't think has to win, frankly. And there's a chance that Troubling Moon can compete, and I cutting back to 7/8. makes a lot of sense. On the outside, we'll see how many horses stay in that eighth race. So, I guess there's a chance. There's a chance, I would think, that Chad Brown leaves Seismic Wave in. The Seismic Wave has run on main tracks. Taos for Danny Gargan could stay in. So we're probably 45 minutes or so. We'll see if when Andy might get it them up first, and that would be good. So we'll make that final decision. If Troubling Moon doesn't run, then I'm going to go to Before You in the seventh. Bill Mott and Jose Ortiz, and that's a good starter allowance. And Before You dipped in for 20,000 to break the maiden, and you know, has got to come back against winners, which is, you know, never easy. But you know, if they were intending to get rid of Before You, they would have offered her up. In a claiming race, right? Instead, she runs in a starter allowance. So she could be one of those horses that just needed, you know, to dip down into easier company. So those are the two horses. If Troubling Moon stays in, I think you're going to get a decent price in that eighth race off the turf, and then in the 6.5 furlong starter allowance Before You, the 7, 4-1, and I think you'll get every bit of 4-1. It's a very balanced field. That Bayshore Foxes on the inside. I'm anxious to hear from see what Seth does in here, because Bayshore Foxes, Phil Bauer, you know, who's already won three races up here for Mr. Rigney. Bayshore Foxes, he's been shopping for an MTO slot and was entered several times, I think at least 2-3 times as an MTO. And then found this spot and has the rail, 3-1. But Cadeau de Pace for Patty Reynolds, 4-1 is competitive. How about Matt O'Connor with Air Cavalry, who looked like a winner last and just missed. Chloe Rose, too, for Toscano, that Nick talked about yesterday. And it has been claimed last two times out, and Toscano runs back here. So, and Targeted Return for Chad Brown. That's a very good competitive starter allowance race going as the 7. So anyway, it looks like I'm okay. Pete is in the background. Pete, good morning.
Good morning to you, my friend. Yeah, I'm enjoying listening to you talk about this fun and challenging sequence. More than most days, I think today we need to really guard that time between when the scratches come in and when it's time to put in these tickets, because it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with this weather, and it's hard to, you know, come to too many conclusions until we know exactly the composition of these fields.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, looking at Dark Skies, yesterday I said to Nick when we ran through the sequence that I did not necessarily think it was a guarantee that we were going to get, you know, tons and tons of rain, but with plenty of rain still in the forecast, you know, the next several days, I'm sure they're guarding the condition of the turf course for these last, you know, 3 weeks, essentially. The last, what do we have, 16 days left? 15 or 16 days left?
Let's see. It's 16, I think, because of the sixth day in the, because
right.
of Labor Day.
Labor Day, exactly right. So, those that were listening in, they're going to have me here to patch into Capital OTB, Pete. So you get to hear this.
I enjoyed that the other week.
Yeah, that's right. You were walking out. As we, although, yeah, ready for me? I think so, Brian. Yeah, Brian's ready for me.
Okay,
yes?
Do that. I'll wait here.
All right, stay right here. I'm basically going to reiterate for those that have been listening on the radio and maybe simultaneously you've been watching Capital OTB, the DePaul play of the day. And if Rusty Arnold sticks with Troubling Moon in that eighth race, I think you're going to get a square price. It depends on how many other horses stay in. Musical America is, you know, easily going to be favored, the MTOs. And although not, you know, this is not an open and shut case. A lot of times, and follow Andy's advice on this, because nobody has a better feel when things go off the turf than Andy. But a 5-2 MTO, Musical America. But Troubling Moon was 10-1 and may get ignored. And his performances off the turf, or on the main track anyway, are very competitive here. And I thought that Lascano on the outside, you know, kind of a stalk-and-go trip at a decent price would be a good play of the day. If they scratch, we're going to go to Before You for the reasons, you know, mentioned earlier. Bill Mott, Jose Ortiz, and this one coming off the maiden breaker. If they wanted to give her away, they would have run her cheap again. Had to dip down to maiden 20 to graduate. Instead, they put her in a starter allowance. So they obviously think enough of her to retain her as opposed to, you know, clean up on aisle 8 and you know, discontinued merchandise. So Before You is 4-1, and it's a very balanced group. But I thought that if we lose Troubling Moon to scratch, then the DePaula play of the day turns to the 7 in the 7th. Before You. Good luck, everybody, and thank you. Talk to you tomorrow from California. That's going to be fun. I think I'll probably tape that one, all right? Is that all right, Brian? I'm going to tape that and send it to you. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you from Del Mar, though, this week. And there it is. The
good stuff.
The ham-handed and cumbersome, you know, video interplay, Pete.
The whole broadcast, I think it's awesome. I think you did it in a very elegant way. It's cool to be able to have the simulcast going. You're everywhere. You know, you're
well, there. Yeah. I even I'm sick of me. you should wait till you talk to Tina. She's got to sit on an airplane with me for the next 8 hours going to Del Mar.
I envy your travel schedule, I have to say. As much as I want, you know, I love Del Mar, obviously, and then it's a little bit painful, and we haven't talked about this too much, it's a little bit painful to be missing the NHC. I can't leave here for that weekend, but I am hoping, if you have the ability to patch people in, if I can do a little bit of time with you anyway,
of course. Absolutely.
To help out, because it's exciting with the NHC nearly upon us, and I'm going to miss seeing everybody we usually see out there. I guess the good news is we'll do it all again in a few months. So that's the positive.
That's true.
And I am going to be covering it. I'm doing an NHC preview show. I just recorded the first segment last night, a really fun discussion with Justin Dew and Mike Somich about approaches to playing multiple entries that more or less turned into a therapy session for Justin. I'm sure he won't mind my saying. But I'm going to talk to a lot of the folks eligible for bonuses and the people I always turn to when I have questions regarding contest play. Hopefully we can get the likes of Paul Sherman and Paul Matisse, all the Pauls, we'll get in the mix. But I'm also really looking forward, hopefully, to being able to patch in with you and do, you know, at least sometime, even if it won't be our 20-hour and 3-day marathon of this past.
Oh, without fail. And as it happens, you know, we'll start broadcasting from Vegas on Tuesday next week after we shift tack away from Del Mar. We'll do a Del Mar weekend Pacific Classic, and I haven't gone over the field yet. They'll draw the rest of the Pacific Classic card today, but they put a you know, it's a nice field. It's not glittery, but it, you know, some good hard hitting handicap horses. And they'll put the rest of that nice card together, the Torrey Pines and the Del Mar Mile and the Handicap. And it should be a very nice day. They've had a good meet at Del Mar, so we're looking forward to it. But we'll do a recap on Monday and then head over to Vegas. So we'll do the lead up to the last chance, first chance, the Thursday contest, and then day one of NHC starts on Friday, and we'll do double shift. We'll do the Friday show live, and then start the feed and the streaming from Vegas for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday until we crown a champion. And then we'll do one more Monday show in Vegas and head home for closing week at Saratoga.
It's a great-sounding schedule, I have to say. Going to get to all these fun places, and it's great that I love that last week here, too. So you'll still get your Saratoga in, which I'm sure you're excited about. But hoping we can get something going in this pick six today. What is our best guess is what's going to happen to this ninth race, which sounds like they're leaving on for now?
I think they're fine. Had the conversation with Mark Cassie yesterday that ultimately, it fulminated into a discussion of the Bolton Landing. Fulminate to me seems very much a major player. You know who bubbled up on my radar this morning when I wrote the sequence up was the other Wesley Ward, that Chi-Town lady that... is 8-1 and gets Johnny and hasn't been seen since Keeneland, Pete, is a little interesting and might fit well with the outside open air box.
I could definitely see it. You ignore him at your peril, and as we've seen in other situations this meet, runners can develop so much between April, May, and when we see them now in the, I hate to even say it, but I think it's time to admit that we're in the late summer now. The improvements made, definitely one to keep on side, I think, if you can afford it in terms of your budget and your approach to this sequence.
The other players, Derry Nain, who we caught early in the meet, in fact, as a play of the day, and Poppy Flower, the other Wesley Ward. I mean, they both make some sense, but it's an interesting mix. 10 horses, 5 of them are coming from out of town, from other venues, and you've got some surface switches. And it's a group that's got a bunch of second timers, and as we saw on Saturday in the special. And Pete, I mean, this is one of the great axioms of racing. The second start of a horse's career is not, always the opportunity for the most improvement, but it very typically is a place where you see great improvement. And a lot of these obviously won at first asking. So coming back in second starts that might look a little slow. And this was the MO with High Oak on Saturday.
That's right. And there's a lot that goes into it. I'm such a figure monkey sometimes. It gets very hard to accept the story you hear on a horse like High Oak. But then you think about it. You think about a horse coming out early, maybe a little bit short of fitness, going in an adequately short distance. Maybe it doesn't matter what the clock says when they're coming back 3 months later, and by all accounts, the horse is doing wonderfully and bred to go longer. And I do think in general, for long shot players, and this certainly applies to tournaments, second-time starters are a fantastic pond in which to fish for prices, simply because in terms of condition, that arrow almost always is pointing forward. And when you can look for other clues, for instance, how a trainer usually brings them over. Do they bring them over ready to fire, pretty much fully formed, or are they a trainer who take a horse along slowly? What does the breeding suggest about what's going to happen this time? There's
sure.
A lot of reasons why you can find big prices in that second start of the career, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if that is the case in a race like the Bolton Landing today.
Well, and, I didn't even talk about the two Amos runners. And Amos has got that 10-1, knees and ships, coming over from Ellis. And there's going to be, some bias against a horse like that coming from Ellis. And then he's also got the one down inside, Cartel Queen, who is on the, you know, quote unquote slower side. Charlie O for Michelle Nevin that won upon introduction and now comes back. This is a really good group for all of these reasons.
It's a tricky race, I think. Yeah. One of the things that's making me crazy about it is there's not a clear race that's like the best form coming out of this. You don't have a lot of winners coming out of the races these horses ran in, so it's tempting to take the clock a bit liberally or a bit literally. Fulminate is the one that you mentioned before, who I landed on. It's hard not to get a little bit of pause when you comb back through that field, but at the end of the day, I decided she won imperiously, and the clock said it was an okay race. So I think she's going to step forward, and I'm definitely going to have plenty of tickets with the number 8 on them in this spot, assuming we do stay on the turf, and hopefully we will.
Well, and let me see if there's been any development on that front, and it's still a little early. What are we, 10, 15-ish? And it's a little early for the... still early for the mutual department to have provided the scratches. So probably another half hour on that front. Gives us a chance, Pete. We were leaning toward some contest discussion. How about a few of the things that came out of this week? And there's actually, I had Jeff Madej about the Canterbury Minnesota Bred Stakes today, and there's a contest coming as well at Canterbury. But did you follow the Spa and Surf contest over the weekend?
I did. I was watching with great interest, names bouncing up and down the leaderboard. There's so much money on the line, and there were plenty of sob stories, as always, to come out of it. But a lot of money given away in the end, and I feel like the Spa and Surf contest, sort of a virtual replacement for the old win contest, and with I think pretty similar prize money in the end. Do you have a final leaderboard there?
Oh yeah, hold on, let me because I actually was gonna, I forgot now that you mention it, I captured both the top 12 and also numbers 13 to 24. And you know, we were coming back from Connecticut. I went to visit my father, and I caught on, I guess it was about mid-card, a little past mid-card at Del Mar, and just when Randall Miller, who's a Pennsylvania attorney, when he made his move, and Anthony Matera, the so-called ATM, he had a great first day, and in fact I know that he did get a nice bonus for that troika that Horse Tourneys did, but he was the leader going into Sunday, and he maintained, but boy, they came at him left and right. Basil DeVito and the Bear came at him, Chris Felica, and a guy by the name of Alan Lahr, who made a late move. But I saw Randall Miller get a mid-price long shot in a thrilling photo. I think it was the 7th at Del Mar. And it could have gone either way. And it vaulted him to the front. And then he held on after the 8th and the 9th when some people were kind of, you know, taking shots. And he ends up winning. Dylan Donnelly made a big run to be 7th. So here's the top finishers. Randall Miller, $200,000 and change. Alan Lahr, Chris and Basil and Anthony, Phil Hodebeck, Dylan Donnelly, Brian Graziano, Mark Mitchell, Steve Duffield, Greg Calawag, and Alex Desidoro were your top 12, the biggest prize makers, takers.
Amazing amount of money being given away, even you know, down to 24th, getting the $2,500,
yeah.
And those first prizes, $235,000, $94,000, $47,000, $35,000, $29,000. I mean, these are scores, even if you... even if you finished in the fifth and sixth positions. And just another amazing run from Dylan, who I had the chance to sit down with and do an interview with within a couple of weeks, a show that I really recommend people go back and listen to over on the In the Money Media Network, because his story is so, he's inspiring in so many ways, and not least because of the amount of work he's willing to put in on these cards. And his success is no accident. It's great to see it coming across a variety of formats, whether it was his third in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge or the amazing run he made on the tour last year, and now to see him keeping that momentum going heading into the NHC, where he is playing for a $1 million bonus. It's definitely, Dylan's going to be one of the stories to follow at this year's NHC, and we'll see what Randall Miller can do for an encore after netting a couple of hundred grand in this contest last weekend.
Well, and because they paid down to 24, let me mention everybody else. Wendy Long, Miguel Wenceslasso, Dan Wild, Stephen Simonovic, Dusty Guidry, Ben Bacek, who was in town and joined his brother at Saratoga over this past week, Mark Racenstein, Mike Bryan, Eric Pinero, Paul Groffi, Michael Kapatis, thank you, and Scott Fiedler.
A good-looking group. Mark Racenstein, one of my favorite names in contests. I think at some point in an article at DRF, I referred to him as Mark Racenstein, if that is your real name.
this was big, and a prize pool of over 600,000.
Yeah, very, very good stuff over there at Horse Tourneys, and lots of opportunities there. Qualifying for events like the Canterbury Contest, you mentioned the Big Ten Challenge, which is going to be awarding all those BCBC seats in September. And I'm sure that Jeff mentioned this when he was on with you yesterday, but you actually have an opportunity to qualify for that one, playing in a live bank event on ExpressBet tonight for this Made in Minnesota card with the four stakes races. Folks should definitely look to get involved, because why put up your $3,000 entry for the big BCBC qualifier in September when you can win it getting some action on a Wednesday? What a day this is between the Pick Six carryover and the card at Canterbury tonight. We've just got another fantastic day for horse players in the summer, weather be damned.
Well, all leading, at least in the short term, to Vegas next week for NHC. That has been an arduous and kind of tortured path, Pete, but it's going to happen, and there's been lots of
under the circumstances. It's just
exactly.
One of those things where it's the good news is it's happening. The better news is it'll be happening again, in just a few months' time, which I'm really looking forward to as well.
What else has been going on? I still haven't seen you somehow. Which is crazy.
It's insane that our paths haven't crossed. We'll have to make that happen the last week. We'll have to do an in-person visit. Other big thing in the contest world, as far as I'm concerned, we've got the return of Horse Player Happy Hour this week. Once again, we're doing all Saratoga races 3 through 10 tomorrow. We still have these two Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge seats that are up for grabs. Now, it might be a little hard to jump in now and win the overall tour prize, though not impossible. But what's very much all to play for is the ability to qualify for our playoffs via two ways. Either the tour, by accruing enough points between now and the end, completely feasible, or if you finish in the top two any week, you get automatic entry into our playoffs, which is basically going to be an 80-person runoff for a BCBC seat. No cost to players for this tour. You just jump in and play. It only costs $20, and all the proceeds, the VIG, as it were, goes to charity, Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance and the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. You can follow along with our live stream. We'll be doing that on the Breeders' Cup social media channels, and you can find it via my Twitter or Matt Bernier's Twitter as well, about 5 to 6:15. We'll cover the last three races live. And the fun part about that show, Steve, very interactive. It's all about chatting with the people in the room with us, answering questions, hearing their picks. It's content unlike any other that we do on the In the Money Media Network. So it's a lot of fun, and I love seeing at people I know who joined us from At the Races on the leaderboard in there, try to give some shout-outs as far as that goes. And hopefully everybody will check it out. You just go to, we were talking about horse tourneys before, the sister site, horseplayers.com, is where you go to sign up for Horse Player Happy Hour. And again, just $20 for a great cause and the best deal going in terms of $20,000 added to the pot at no cost to players. So hopefully we'll see a lot of listeners over there.
Excellent. Well, Pete, I appreciate it, and we'll talk next week, and we'll probably actually get you some cameos, pretty regularly. We can check in,
that.
And let me know what your schedule looks like, and we'll interface and bring you in, and looking forward to it. It's one of these weird situations where you know what to expect, but you don't know what to expect.
It's true. Do we have a head count? Do we know how many people are going to be showing up in Vegas? Or is that a Keith Chamblin question?
Keith addressed it last week. They had, as of last week, there had been just 40, I'll call them cancellations or demurs, as it were. And so, I think the latest number Keith mentioned was 400 and how much was it? 425, 450, with the, close to 550 or 600 entries with the dual qualifiers in that range. So figure four and change.
Very normal. Very, very normal size field.
Yeah, I can tell you that in terms of normality, the one thing that I see happening are dining reservations are flying back and forth. there's been a lot of check-ins on that front, including Nick Tamaro yesterday, John Nichols, and it seems like everybody, is aware of the situation that they're going to deal with, but they're going to still make the most of it.
Well, I'm looking forward to participating from afar and listening. The good thing about not being on the coverage all the time is I can listen to it. So we'll have that on whenever I'm not actively at the track wagering, pretty much. And as far as my availability, I'll send you some times. But anytime you need somebody, or if you want help, we'll see somebody on the leaderboard doing well who's maybe in my portfolio of contacts. I can send them over. I can do a little light remote producing as well, if that helps you.
Sweet, that'd be great, and maybe even we could do a little live cut in somehow with some video interface with the backyard with Paul Matisse and company.
Paul made
the decision that no matter what was going to happen, when it became apparent that this was going to happen in the summer and it was going to be these dates, he said he's not going to leave. He's got family obligations, and
it makes sense. Can't avoid it. But I'm glad so many people are able to make it, and I'm glad I don't have to miss out for too long with the next one coming right up. That takes some of the sting out of it.
That's true. The most important question everybody's probably on asking right now is Battler. What about the Battler?
I haven't seen much of the Battler this summer. You think he's qualified? Is he going out to Vegas?
The only reason he's qualified is a funny term. He's qualified to go eat at all the at all the dinners, but I don't know about the contest. Now he does have his man Chuck Simons in town, so Chuck is going to be around through the end of the meet in Saratoga, and so he may graft on to Chuck, I mean, boy, that's one. Keep your hands and fingers, in the car at all times with those two. shoulder down to the feedback.
Oh my God! I will miss the dinners. I will miss the indulgent dinners and displays of ferocity that are going to be on display next weekend in Las Vegas.
Pete Fortitel, everybody, looms boldly on your Twitter machine at the In the Money Player Podcast. Pete, talk next week.
Absolutely. Cheers, my friend.
Pete Fortenzell, everybody. Let's take a break here, probably our only break of the morning, with Sid Fernando stepping in shortly, and some the Clancy that's going to join us is of the Sean variety. So we will talk to Sean Clancy, and we will see how he's feeling about an opportunity for River D to annex the Jonathan Shepherd. And, of course, Sean himself, a winner of the former New York Turf Riders Cup handicap, going back a little bit. And for those of you that didn't happen to see Sean's column, Praise the Prince, who himself won this race 20 years ago or so. Very nice farewell column. Praise the Prince was euthanized, and at 20-something, 28, 29, I forget what the number was. But if you didn't see Sean's piece, it was really lovely. And he talked to Gus Brown, who takes care of the Augustan retirees. 2003 it was. Praise the Prince won the Turf Riders for Santa Hendricks. And of course, Gus had ridden Praise the Prince. So anyway, we'll talk to Sean. 1998 for Sean's win on Hokan. Back after this. Here is here's Del Mar Barbie, by the way. Pacific Classic Barbie. Second half at the races next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company?